The Share Pickers Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast right now and on video, it's Eloy Mazon, CEO of 4 Global. That's 4GBL ticker. Eloy, thanks for joining me.
It's great to join you, Justin.
Yeah, now we've spoken before, and it's a very interesting business. Anything that concerns data in this day and age is very important, of course, especially now with the flourishing of, you know, AI and what you can do with that data. So before we get into, you know, the details of how you're doing and what's to come, the size of the market and the potential, just explain to people, 4 Global, what's it about, Eloy?
Yeah, so we, at the core of our business, we're a data and technology business, and we've built one of the biggest databases of what we call a sport participation in the world. And in essence, is how sport is consumed. So when you go to a gym or you go for a run outside or cycling, we get all that data from that activity that that takes place. And we use that data to help our customers, both in the public and the private sector, to work around three core areas. One is the customers. Mm-hmm. So how to create a more long-term relationship with them. It's about the operations and how they run the business and making them more efficient and effective. And it's about investments. So how do they target the right investments and how they maximize the return on them? So it's everything around growth for their organizations. And we do that through data and the generation of these actionable insights, which are critical to make faster and smarter decisions. That's at the core of what we do.
Yeah, yeah. So the problem you're solving is really is getting what the best return on investment for these people, is it for these customers? Is that right?
Yeah. So what we do, so if you pick, for example, our typical customer in the public sector, and then I'll do the same on the private sector. So our typical customer in the public sector will be the government organization, say they're responsible for health or for sport. And through all the data that we've accumulated over the years, and just to give you some stats, we track in excess of 35 million unique individuals, and we're generating 4 billion data points at the moment. And that number grows, it's probably about 60 million per day in terms of data points.
Wow.
This is a big, big data asset. And what that allows us to do is it allows us to really understand intimately their customers. So what their behaviors, how to predict their behaviors, what they're doing, why are they doing it, and how they're doing it. So when we look at our government, and we're working, for example, with UK governments and other governments around the world, what we help them do is to understand participation in the country, because there's a very strong correlation between physical activity and health outcomes, which we've established as well through partnerships with academia like Sheffield Hallam. And what they're using our platform and our data is to really understand participation across the country and how and where to invest, whether it's in facilities or programs, to get more people active more of the time. Okay. Yeah. And not just that, so that's the investment part of it. So where should we place our money? But also to how to do it in the most efficient and effective manner. So what groups should they be targeting? How should they be targeting? And then monitor and evaluate, because our data is in real time, what impact that's having on them. So that is targeting all of the investment, for example, at the moment that Sport England puts into the sport and physical activity in the UK. We've been working with them for many years. How they invest in sport in England. On the other side, private sector customers, it ranges from health providers all the way to just your big chains of gyms across the country, in the UK and overseas. And they use our data for multiple purposes, from understanding how they operate in their facility and how it compares to others in the industry. So a lot of benchmarking, so that they can understand how to do more efficiently and effectively, but also really a lot around investment. So where is latent demand that is not being tapped, and therefore what type of facilities, or how should they modify their facilities to really tap into that latent demand? And lately, because we've got such a huge amount of data, we can really predict behaviors. So for example, one of our most successful products is we can predict 7 to 8 weeks ahead of you wanting to cancel your membership for that facility, that you are likely to cancel. But not only that, because that, in my book, wouldn't pass the so what test. It'll be a very well-documented disaster because, predicting that you're going to cancel it and then you cancel it. Is we can also predict what type of intervention from the operator will most likely to retain you. And we can do that with 97% accuracy.
Wow.
So it's fascinating. And that's thanks to a combination of three things. One is the AI that we've embedded into extracting a lot of these insights from the data. It's obviously our team of data scientists developing a lot of the models and tools and algorithms. But it's also the quality and quantity of the data for us to be able to really predict that those behaviors. So in terms of what sectors we operate, obviously I've already mentioned public and private sector, but the two markets in which we currently provide in services is the sport and fitness is one of them, but the other one is also the health and well-being. And one of the products that we launched a few years back is what we call the social value calculator, which is looking at sport participation and then predict what return on investment from increasing participation you'll have because of things like health outcomes, social inclusion, etc. And that model, which was developed by Sheffield Hallam that we've embedded into our platform, is now used for many governments around the world to target the investment and justify the return that they're going to get from investing in getting people active. Because, going back to your point of, what's the macro problem that we're solving with our data is, I think, and COVID really brought it to the forefront, is that, the underlying health globally is declining. And the health systems around the world, it's not really possible for them to keep building capacity. So there is a big drive across the board, both public and private sector, to really try and tackle those conditions that are what they call preventable, because they're lifestyle conditions like your diabetes type 2, obesity, and so on and so forth, as well as others that will be impacted very positively by an active lifestyle. And this is all based on all the research that the World Health Organization has done. And we've seen a massive increase, especially in demand around governments around the world, in really wanting to understand participation and how to get people active, which then drives a lot of demand from the private sector in that space. So we're benefiting from those two waves, which has been great over the last 2 years.
Yeah, and you can sort of see, obviously, budget coming up, and apparently there's a £2 billion shortfall for the NHS. And of course, it positively impacts that. I mean, when you are doing exercise, not only physically healthy, but mentally as well. And I think there's a mental health cliff edge happening at the moment. There's so many people reporting, deteriorating mental health, and so it helps them. So it makes sense not only to make a happier, healthier nation, but the less of the impact that will have in the NHS if people get out and be active. And but that's phenomenal. The data. You can predict in people's sort of patterns, I suppose, in visits or whatever they do, that they won't be going to the gym or be cancelling their memberships. I can see from both sides, it's valuable. It's worth the investment, isn't it?
Oh, totally. And I think what you get now is people are really starting to understand not so much the value of the data, but the value of the insights that they can draw from the data. And that's something that we're very strong on. So when we provide, our offering is divided in what we call three areas. One is the Insight Lab. And the Insight Lab is what we call, it's all about the big question. For example, for a government body in Europe post-COVID, they wanted to understand how they were going to open up their facilities back and how do they target, who do they target, and how much investment should we go into it. So it was this team from our organization in the Insight Labs that actually answered that question and provided them with models and predictions and the ways of doing that. And it was interesting. I always tell the story that when we presented the first report and we were doing sort of monthly models, at the first meeting, they said, no, we don't believe your model. It's too optimistic. It will never happen. And my response was, well, we're doing it on a monthly basis, so let's come back next month and see against the actual. Yeah. And they were right, we were wrong. We were only 97% accurate. So there were three.
I'd love to be 97% accurate in most of my decisions.
Yeah, no, and it's because of the quality of the data we get. You know, I think if you ask my data scientists, they'll say, no, it wasn't 97, it was 97 point something percent, because they'll be very precise. So that's all about the big question. I mean, we're also working at the moment with one of the new cities that has been built in a foreign country. And their question is, how do you build a city where in excess of 75% of the people are engaged in sport and physical activity? How does that translate into what facilities should we build? What sports should we offer? What kind of distance people should be traveling? What kind of impacts will that have on health outcomes? And, you know, when we talk health outcomes, we talk both physical and mental health outcomes. So those are the kind of big questions. So when an operator comes to us and say, you know, I've got to grow by X percentage, which means I need to build 20 new facilities next year, where do I build them? Where is the latest demand? Those are the kind of big questions that that team answers. And that generates what we call one-off revenues, but more likely than not, repeatable revenue, because it's an ongoing relationship. Because as you answer the question, they want more detail and get into more refinement of the answer. Then we move into what we call the insight solutions. And that's customers that haven't been through those big questions. They want to benefit from the insights and information that our platform and our data provides them. So they're looking at implementing our tools and systems into their organizations. And those are very long-term relationships that generate recurring and repeatable revenue. And we do two things in there. We do, obviously, the license from accessing the data and the platform, but we also, within the license, we package within Insight Solutions a hefty amount of what we call enhanced customer success. Because what we're building in all these organizations is an enhanced capability. This is not replacing a box for this other box because it's better or shiny. This is building a brand new capability into an organization that's going to take them to the next level. So we want to make sure that we do our traditional customer success around this is how you use the technology and the platform and everything else, but also what we call business customer success, which is about embedding the platform and, more importantly, the insight they generate into the way they run their business, which is why through that process we're now achieving, I think, is 95% retention on all of our customers. Right. and renewals. Some years it's gone as high as 98%, and what we've seen is that, you know, people that don't renew is they don't renew either because they've been bought out or they go out of business for some other reason. It's not because they stop using it. So that's really successful. And that relationship then migrates, you know, once we get them at that maturity curve in terms of how to utilize data and insight on our platform, then they have that capability in-house, and then they focus just on licensing our technology. And at any point, you get new big questions that generate new insight solutions, that generate new license. And that's kind of a cycle that we keep going through. But it's very interesting. The mega trend for us is twofold. One is people are finally understanding the use of data rather than software. You know, it's the data that will generate the answers, not the software. Because software without data is a very shiny platform, but that's about it. And the other one is this correlation between health and physical activity and wellness. You know, what it is in the corporate world because of the impact all the way from ESG to all the way to reduce absenteeism, to against which you can put an investment figure of savings, or the public sector, because the real massive drive, a massive amount of investment that is currently going in getting people active. If you go to the Sport England website here in the UK, you'll be able to see, and the user using the social value calculator, that for every pound they invest in getting people active, I think they get 3.8 or 3.7 pounds back in health outcomes. So that's a huge return on investment. And that's what's enabling not just Sport England, but other organizations around the world. And this has been championed by the World Health Organization to say, actually, transfer money from your health department into your sport department so we can start focusing on getting people active. This is not about medals. This is about getting people active for a healthier, happier society. So it's a big purpose.
And even from, you know, a company point of view, You know, imagine if an employee goes ill, you know, on a day. I mean, how much is that going to cost them? When, in fact, if you sort of just employed, maybe give them a gym membership for 30, 50 quid a month or whatever, it'd probably prevent that. Or if you help them in that kind of way, you know, help them mentally and physically. It's an investment, isn't it? Rather, and a prevention, you know?
No, totally. And one of the things that we're starting to look at, which is really interesting, and it kind of exemplifies the potential our business has into the future, is, you know, in the US, there's a huge culture of private health insurers. Mm-hmm. Now, those private health insurers are really getting into what they call corporate wellness, which is offering a whole wellness package to organizations. So, We have a number of potential offering in that market that we're exploring. Number one, we can help these health providers to really understand the risk profile of individuals, because our data has got a direct link between physical activity and health outcomes. Things like, you know, diabetes type 2, chronic heart disease, breast cancer, chronic obesity, etc. So those are well-established links that we can measure based on physical activity levels, and also we can apportion a financial cost to those. That's how we do the return on investment. But equally, we can identify where these people are. You know, who are these active people? Who are these really healthy people? Because we know where they are through our data. So that's on one side. And on the other side is it enables these corporate wellness organizations to provide organizations with a very clear narrative about what social return they provide into society, whether it's through their employers or through the initiatives that they're doing, whether they, as you were saying, they give them a free gym membership or they give them, you know, an app that they can have on their phone for wellness. We can measure the impact of all of that and return that back to the organization that they can then use to understand how much money they save in and justify the investment. Or equally as important for many of our customers around ESG, you know.
Exactly. And you've mentioned obviously, you know, you're working with Sports England, but you're also got, you know, quite a decent sort of geographical footprint here. I see Mexico, Saudi Arabia, and so how are these people learning about you? Because I'm assuming there's quite a few, you know, companies involved in this area of data and sports data. You know, what makes you different from them?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question. We focus on three core markets. So we focus on European market, North America, and the Middle East, but primarily Saudi Arabia at the moment. And, you know, you've got to remember, we've got a really strong DNA in sport that's been accumulated over 20 years. And we've been a private company for 21 years, and then we listed in 2021, and we've been listed since then. So we have a really strong reputation in this space, not just for what we're doing now, but also what we're doing in the past. So that's really helped us build that credibility. And we've also built this unique, you know, I keep going back to our data asset, which is very unique. And I think a lot of it comes through our reputation and the uniqueness of our assets. So a lot of the work that we're doing in the Middle East as a whole is because we've got data asset that no one else has out there of the scale, size, and reach that is comparable. So we kind of like the Experian of sport, if you want to look at it that way, physical activity. Yeah. So we've kind of carved a really interesting niche within sport and physical activity with such a broad range of use cases, which is why we set up the Insight Lab, because it might not be something that we offer at the moment as a licensed product, but people will still have these big questions. And those big questions have got the added benefit that they generate new product lines. So, for example, one of the questions that we used to get a lot is, as I alluded earlier, operators coming and saying, I need to invest X number of millions on growth in new facilities, especially in the private sector. Where shall I spend this money? Where shall I build them? And that question kept on coming. So we've actually productized that, and we've now got a product that we license to organizations. So it also serves as that. We do also have, you know, it's not all word of mouth and our reputation, which is huge, but we've also built a very robust sales workforce It's not a huge team because we don't need to. And especially internationally, we tend to operate through partnerships to minimize our risk. Like, for example, in the US, we've got a couple of really good partnerships, both on the operator side, but also on the more generic national governing bodies, like the National Federation side of things, because that allows us a much quicker entry into the market. It allows a much quicker entry into the market, reducing our cost of entry, because we don't have to hire hundreds of sales people to tap into that market. And we also start partnering with people from which we very complementary. So we offer them something that they can have, and it's not cold calling, it's going straight to their existing customers. Like, for example, we announced last year, I don't know if you've seen it, a partnership with Jonas, who is the number one provider of sports and fitness systems in the US for gyms in particular, and they've got a whole range of system. And our product and data was very complementary to their offering. So what the deal there is, they're offering it as part of their license package. So for us, it's fantastic because it's open a client list, which is actually bigger than the entirety of the UK market. I mean, that's that's the thing of the US. And they're going to be selling as part of the license our solution, which is fantastic. And we only come in at what we call meeting two side of things. All the front end and relationship and everything else is done by that. And there's already contracts in place. So this is not coming into a market saying, hey, will you come and see me? These are established relationships. So we're very excited about that. And I think that, you know, certainly in the medium term, provides us a huge foothold in into that market. That's kind of how people come to us. So internationally, it's very driven by partnerships until we have a strong name in the market and people then start coming directly. And that's starting to happen in the Middle East. And obviously in our core market, like the UK and Europe, is directly through our sales team.
Yeah. And before we came on, you told me about, I mean, people talk about data, and it's not just a case of, you know, accumulating this data, but it's a lot of work goes on cleansing it. And you give me an example of swimming. Just mention that again. And just to show how complex, you know, the process is to getting the right data.
Yeah. So when we started accumulating data, and this is back in 2012, you know, at the heart, we're a bunch of engineers. You know, I'm as my father always takes great pride in telling me, I'm 17th generation engineer, believe it or not.
It's in the blood and in the genes.
It's in the blood and in the genes. Yeah. And we were fascinated in trying to answer our big question, which was, you know, what drives people to be active, you know, and what impact things like an Olympic Games or a Football World Cup has in that. So that's where we started accumulating data. And back then, the sector was data rich, but inside poor. No one was really doing anything with the data. And part of the reason why they were doing that, which was one of the barriers that we had to overcome, is that there's no standardization of data in the sport. So even today, in the world of sports, there's no standards as to how you codify data. So, for example, even today, for swimming activity, so when you go to a private or public sector gym and you go for a swim, they ask for, I think, it's somewhere around 25,000 different ways of codifying swimming. So the first thing that you need to do when you
start, how do you sort that out?
It is, first of all, you need to get your pipes into all these data sources, all these aggregates, so you can get them. You then need to get, especially now in the GDPR, you need to get the data user agreements signed so that it's all done properly and protecting the data of the individuals. And then you've got to cleanse it, because otherwise it's just pointless. And that's what we've seen in a lot of markets in which we operate. I mean, I was very surprised when we started doing business in the US. They totally get the value of data, but they've not really, because they grow a lot but through acquisition in that market, they've got this problem of cleansing data and creating a unique data set from which they can draw all these insights. So that's really, you know, when you look at our business and what competitive edge or you know, barriers of entry we've generated, first and foremost is the size of the data set. You know, for anyone to replicate this data set, it will take a very long time. But secondly, and I haven't mentioned this, but we've never paid a penny for any data. We always, even today, we still get the data for free. back in the day, because no one valued it, so we gave it free. And now is because if you're not part of what we call the Data Hub Club, you're not going to benefit of the market-wide insights that we can generate. So people need to be part of this data club, because otherwise they're at a disadvantage to the competitors. It's a little bit like the, I think, Bloomberg fact sheets, where they get all the analysis from everyone and then sell it back to give that whole industry-wide. That's what we do. We don't just give them really detailed insights about the business, but we give them in the context of the whole market. So if you want to benchmark your activity to the market, you can. If you want to benchmark down to postcode, you can. That's what we enable. And that's why people now still gives us the data for free in all the markets in which we operate. So that's another big advantage. I don't think you could pull that off now. I think, you know, people will want a lot of money for their data. But also is, you know, creating all these APIs to the data sources, especially on the structured data that I was referring to earlier. You know, we've got in excess of 90 different integrations to different aggregated data sources so that all that data flows into us in real time. So when you look at all these component parts, and that's why we took so long to come to the market, because having been a private business for a long time, we wanted to get everything done. We wanted to get our platform ready. We wanted to get our technology ready. We wanted to get our customers ready to then come to the market to grow. Not to ask for money, not to say, right, we're still a loss-making business, we need money. No, we wanted to come to the market to grow. And that's what we've been doing since, because, you know, from day one, we've been profitable, we've been revenue generating, we're growing, and we've got a very robust balance sheet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, looking at that, I mean, you've gone from 2022, you've gone from 3.6 million, we're talking about, you know, a 14 million market cap company, and you seem quite undervalued here, and the brokers suggest you are, but from 3.6 million to 2022 to 5.5 or 5.6 in 2023, estimated to do 20% again, so that's 53% the first 2 years, but forecast to almost 20% top line growth through from 2023 to 26, so that's very impressive. And in fact, just looking at what the broker says here, they say on the calendar year 2024, EV sales 1.7 for global trades at 50% discount to UK listed data intelligence peers, despite strong organic growth, improving revenue visibility, and they've got you down for a £1 target price, 12-month target, you know, 55p. So it seems undervalued. How is business currently?
It's going very well, and I think we've had a good year so far. I think certainly some of the trends that we've just talked about have really helped, especially our international expansion. I think when we set out on this growth journey, we said there were three core pillars to a growth. One was around landing and expanding customers, and that's something that we're really good at. Once we, as I've seen from our retention rates, once we land a customer, it's more of a partnership. We keep doing more and more work for them, and that's not because, well, which we are very good salespeople, but it's because of the value. It's really valuable what we do for them, and it becomes really embedded in the way they do business. This is not a piece of software that provides them with insight from our data that they turn on and off. This is actually embedded in the way they run their businesses. So that's why it's so sticky. The other one was to do that land and expand, but internationally, and really focus on those three core markets, which may seem quite a big spread, but you know, we already had a very strong foothold on the European market. The US market was the market in which we wanted to invest heavily, and I think medium to long term is a really exciting market for us. It's going as we planned, and we always said the Middle East, we were going to be reactive and very much work through partnerships, and that strategy has really paid up. We've formed some really strong partnerships in the region, which are very complementary, and I think that the combined force is doing incredibly well. We've got a really strong partnership with a company called Mace, who is a big program management organization, and they're doing a lot of work in the sport, so we provide a lot of that insight. And recently, you might have noticed from one of our announcements, well, the chief operating officer is actually joining our board. So, you know, that partnership is getting stronger and stronger by the day. But the third pillar on our growth agenda is acquisitions. And I think in this first couple of years in the market, we wanted to focus on organic growth because there was plenty there, as we demonstrated, and we wanted to, as much as you can ever say, you know, solidify that growth so that we know year on year we're going to be there. And now we're going to start turning our eye to acquisitions. Now, this is not a buy and build strategy. These are more tuck-in acquisitions. So we want to make sure that we buy the right companies that are either going to get us a stronger foothold in a particular market, or is going to bring data or technology that makes more sense than for us to build it ourselves, either because of cost or the speed to market. So they're very targeted. They're not going to be, you know, millions and millions. You know, we're talking at this of sub 2 million revenue type companies. And very important for us is we're not going to be making buying loss-making businesses. We're very good at running profitable business, and that's what we want to stick to it, to continue with that model, because we want to be known in the market as, you know, reliable, predictable a stock that continues to grow. And I think you're right. I think, you know, and that's from our brokers, we're undervalued. I think people are starting to understand the story. They're starting to understand the growth potential of the space in which we operate. But more importantly, I think they're starting to understand, you know, the role of data, the role of AI, and this huge asset that we build, and you know, what a global appeal it has in terms of the markets in which we operate, and how unique it is. And you know, I found it very flattering when our broker put some of the perceived peers in our space, and they had the names like, you know, YouGov and Experian, which are all multi-billion, which kind of shows that what we've managed to build is the kind of thing that you need an organization of that size and scale to build. We've managed to do it way before then. So, you know, we hope that we kind of prove everyone where we can get to.
Yeah, absolutely. And one final thing before we go, we can't mention, of course, you did touch on it, AI, of course, AI is only as good as the data. And if you have a lot of data, and I did see you starting a trial with, you know, in AI, how's that going? And is it more inroads into the AI side of things?
Yeah, I find the whole AI space fascinating because, you know, everyone talks about AI, but when I talk to people and organizations that they say, oh yeah, you know, we're using AI. And I ask him one simple question is, how have you trained your AI?
Yeah.
And you get two types of answers. The blank stare saying, what is he talking about? And you know that they're not using AI. They're just using buzzword.
Yeah.
And the ones that go into very detailed discussion go, yeah, you are definitely using AI.
Yeah.
The reason why I mentioned that is because for us, AI is a tool.
Yeah.
That's it. It's a tool. And we spend the last 6 to 8 months training that tool. And we can train it because we've got the data and we've got the algorithms. So we're training our AI for two things. One is on the back end, we can achieve somewhere like 70 to 80% efficiencies on data processing, which will in turn, either we can put that additional capacity to service more customers or reduce costs, because obviously people like AWS and others charge you for processing power. So that automatically is a huge advantage, which is on the less sexy side of AI. On the front end, what is allowing us to do is two things. One is to provide far more detailed insights from the huge amount of data that we have, and that's what we currently trial with customers, and it's really, really encouraging, and hopefully we'll have some good news in terms of new product launches around that. But secondly is what we're now doing is we're constantly running AI in the background, okay, churning through all our data. And every 2 to 3 weeks, we look at the correlations that it's finding between the data sets and between behaviors. And we're finding some really interesting thing that is helping us increase the level of insight that we generate to our customers. So it's not just about, you know, the ChatGPT type of approach, tell me what I should be worrying about, but it's actually identifying correlations and insights that we haven't picked up already. And that's what it's doing really, really efficiently. So that's how we're using AI, is enhancing insights either directly to our customers or generating new insights that we can then upsell to our customers. But equally as important on the back end, really reduce our cost structure and increase efficiencies. And I think it's really exciting where this is heading and where where we want to get to in the future, and you know, this is in the next couple of years, this is an R&D, is that, you know, when we talk about the Insight Lab and the big question, we want to get to a point that you can ask that big question and AI answers it for it. And we certainly have got the data to be able to do that. And we certainly are constantly building the algorithms to put into our products that will allow us to train and do that. Who knows whether people will start asking access to our data set to actually train their own AI tools. Because, of course, at the moment, we monetize in that huge asset, as I mentioned, through the Insight Lab, but also through license to our platforms that draw the insights. We not even begin to think as to what the commercialization of direct access to the data would be.
Yeah, wow.
So there are huge opportunities in the future.
Yeah. No, genuinely fascinating. It is talking to you, and you can sort of see the potential of where this could go. Because let's be honest, we're only going to need more data, and it's only the way of truly measuring, like I say, return on investment or performance or the health of a nation. So it's going to get bigger and bigger. Eli, thanks for chatting to me. Hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Many thanks.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.